Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you gotta check out NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel Chewable Tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease. Plus, it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus Chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Peter King Podcast. So happy to be back in the home office. Man, it feels like I've been away forever. And although being away forever has a lot of fun elements to it, it's pretty nice to sleep in your own bed after a little while. So it's been 4+ weeks away mostly. I was home for 4 days of that. And now as we record on Wednesday morning, August 30, I'm joined by my partner, Miles Simmons. And Miles, listen, you know, I'm really excited about the start of this season for a few reasons. Not the least of which, I love doing our podcast. But the other thing that I think is kind of exciting is that, you know, the table is set. Everything, you know, it was a relatively uneventful, with the exception of Jonathan Taylor time. But I think other than that, you know, it really wasn't a real newsy cut day. And so it just, to me, lends a lot of interest to what we're going to see in the next week as we get ready for week one. As one PR guy was telling me the other day, this is our week zero. And that's exactly what it is around the NFL right now.
Yeah, it's an interesting time. Obviously, you know, a lot of guys get cut, a lot of guys lose their jobs, but then, you know, you get the movement of people getting to practice squads, and it just starts to really feel like, okay, now this is the team that's going to be going into the season. This is who we really feel like we are. And it's not just that everybody's around. We can kind of insulate ourselves, really start preparing for the things that we're going to need to do in order to win games, instead of just making ourselves better as teams do from late July into late August. So I like this time of year. I like going into Labor Day week. And I especially like now that the cuts come early on in the week, and we don't just have a huge slate of Thursday games, and then Friday we've got to deal with stuff, Saturday we've got to deal with stuff. We have a nice little weekend that we can all take our time, you know, enjoy our families basically one last time before the gauntlet of NFL season really starts coming, because it's 18 weeks plus the postseason, and we all are just going to be in it for real.
We're going to be joined in a few minutes on the podcast this week by Geno Smith, the quarterback of the Seattle Seahawks. Oh, I spent time with up in Seattle. And also, I had a Zoom conversation with Sean Payton, the coach of the Denver Broncos. I had planned to go to Denver, one of the newsiest, most interesting teams, but I was under the weather and had to skip a couple of camps in mid-camp, and so I missed out, but you'll hear from Sean Payton here in a few minutes. Miles, let's get to three things that I believe are particularly newsworthy as we head into the guts of week zero, as we're now going to call it. So Jonathan Taylor did not get traded. It's a clear sign to me that the Indianapolis Colts said, we want a one for Jonathan Taylor. or a projected very high two in something else, and they never got it. So, first of all, the news, ESPN has reported that both Green Bay and Miami were trying hard to get Jonathan Taylor, could not do it. I find that a bit odd from Green Bay's perspective, not necessarily because he's not a great player, because Jonathan Taylor is a great player. But the Packers right now have one of the best 1-2 combinations at running back in football. And look, I thought all along that there was a good chance it was going to be Miami. I'm a little surprised that they didn't do it. But again, you're the Miami Dolphins. You're facing soon having to pay Tua. Do you want to get it? Do you want to do something that you didn't expect to do with your salary structure in devoting, say, $12 million a year to signing Jonathan Taylor? So I can understand why teams didn't do it, but now we head into this uneasy truce that there's going to be, and it may be a lot worse than uneasy, quite honestly, with Jonathan Taylor, who, you know, the word on the street, Miles, is Jonathan Taylor is not injured, and that the Colts are going to basically pay him for the first 4 weeks of this season while he is away and he can get his head right, so that for the last 13 weeks, they can get some good use out of Jonathan Taylor. But again, it's an unresolved situation. And if I'm the Colts, I really don't want to head into the season with the situation the way it is, but such is life.
Yeah, Jonathan Taylor still being on the physically unable to perform list, or I guess being transferred to the reserve PUP list rather than, you know, the active PUP list as it is in the preseason, is one of these things that just fascinates me. I mean, there's a lot of weird stuff, I feel like, Peter, that has gone on with Jonathan Taylor and the Colts, where, you know, you've got the team's owner kind of battling the player's agent on Twitter, and then you've got the team's owner coming out on the record and saying, hey, you know, we've not offered a contract. And then Jonathan Taylor's at practice every day, but he's in a hoodie and he looks so discontented. You know, I don't quite get what the end game could possibly be here for these two sides. And it's interesting because, you know, if him being injured is not the holdup, which apparently it was not in the trade, like, are you really sure still if you're Miami or if you're Green Bay or maybe you were another mystery team that was interested? No, if the guy's not practicing and he's still coming off an ankle injury, and then he lands on the PUP. Like, I all these things, Peter, like, I don't know. I it's hard for me to square all of them together to add up to whatever this is. I don't really get it. I mean, I do on the one hand, but on the other, it's like they're all these separate little elements that just, they don't seem to fit together to form a cohesive puzzle at all. So that's kind of where my brain lands when I'm thinking about Jonathan Taylor, the Colts, the Dolphins, the Packers, and whoever else. I can't quite square it. And I don't know where it's going next, other than, I guess, the next checkpoint is what happens week 5 when Jonathan Taylor's eligible to return. Does he actually come back? And then what happens at the trading deadline? Is there a team that makes the Colts an offer they can't refuse because they've seen what their running back situation looks like, you know, over the first, let's call it half-ish of the season. And then they say, all right, well, we now know what we could do by bringing in Jonathan Taylor and how much better that could make us, a la what the 49ers did last year when they brought in Christian McCaffrey.
Here's the interesting thing, I think, Miles. I mean, I think everybody after the deadline passed on Tuesday, the 4 p.m. deadline that the Colts had arbitrarily, quite honestly, set as the time that they wanted to have a resolution for Jonathan Taylor. Just hold on for a second and let's just think about something, okay? There's no reason why the Indianapolis Colts couldn't trade Jonathan Taylor at some point in the next 4 weeks. Honestly, in the next 7 weeks. You know, all the way up until the trading deadline, there's absolutely no reason. If it continues to be a stalemate between player and team, I would expect them to pick up the phone and call one of these teams again. Maybe call both, maybe call more than two. So to me, Miles, I kind of look at this right now and I'm saying, all right, so let's see what happens if, let's say, Raheem Mostert or A.J. Dillon go down in the month of September, they're lost for any significant period of time. I mean, to me, this isn't over. Just because they say, yeah, we want to have a decision made, there's absolutely no reason that it has to be done. So I think if Jonathan Taylor continues to mope around, I still think he could get dealt.
Yeah, and I think that makes complete sense. You know, there is no trading deadline that happens in August. Like, that's not really a thing.
Right.
You know, the season hasn't even started yet. So it was a completely arbitrary deadline that the Colts kind of set. But in some ways, it does make sense because it's like, you know, you have to make a roster decision on Jonathan Taylor on that Tuesday, whether it is, you know, you're going to have him active and be on the 53, or you're going to say, you know, we're going to keep paying you and we're not putting you on the NFI, as they sort of threatened to do earlier in the in August or in July, when things sort of started coming to a head here. So I don't know where this goes, I guess, is what I keep thinking. I mean, you know, if you're going to trade for Jonathan Taylor, then ostensibly you are saying that we value you enough to not just trade a premium pick for you, but also to have you come in and we're going to sign you to a deal that you think is good. So if you are Miami or if you're Green Bay, I mean, is that something that's really attractive to you? I guess to an extent it was, but not enough to give the Colts the kind of premium pick, so to speak, that they were looking for to move on from somebody who they value, but don't value enough from Taylor's perspective so that they can continue on in this relationship that they have with the long-term contract.
So that will bear watching. I think the one other thing that hit me as I followed along with the events on Tuesday, you know, the cutdown date, it was extremely uneventful. You know, usually you see some really big names are going to either be waived or cut. If you're a vested veteran with more than 4 years of experience, you're not subject to the waiver system. You could, once you're cut, you can sign anywhere. But there were very, very few, names on this thing that really mattered, you know. And so to me, when I looked at this cut date, the one thing I said was, what in the world are we going to be talking about all week? And the only other thing that I thought of is, I forget who tweeted it, but that the Minnesota Vikings are looking to trade Jalen Reagor. And I just thought to myself, look, Jalen Reagor, the most famous thing that happened to Jalen Reagor is that the Philadelphia Eagles, a very, very smart organization, drafted him ahead of Justin Jefferson. And obviously that's something that Howie Roseman, he told me in training camp, obviously when you make a mistake like that, it drives you. It really drives you to be better. And so I think one of the things that was interesting is I said, who in the world would trade Jalen Reagor? And it's just one of those things at this time of year that, you know, a team says, hey, we're trying to get something for Jalen Reagor. And so obviously it's a news item that's going to be put out there. But it sort of strains the credulity to believe that any team in the NFL would trade for him. And now Adam Schefter has reported that he will simply be released. And Miles, the one thing about this that to me is a bit of a cautionary tale, now that, look, maybe Jalen Reagor will catch on somewhere. But, I mean, the guy had 8 catches for 104 yards last year. They draft Jordan Addison. Even after losing Adam Thielen, it's K.J. Osborne, Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, and they got a couple of other young guys who they like, it's if you can't make a mark and you can't stay in a place that could use a little bit of receiver depth, that says it all to me.
Oh, yeah, no doubt, Peter. Me too. But, you know, it's not entirely surprising to me, based on what we have seen in the past from Rieger, that he didn't necessarily catch on with the Vikings. You know, sometimes a guy does need that change of scenery, and then he can come in and he can be productive, and it can be this and it can be that. But for whatever reason, it just doesn't seem to be working for him. And so when you aren't even going to get traded for a conditional seventh, you know, at this time of year, like, that to me speaks volumes to what the rest of the league thinks about him.
I want to get to just one other thing, speaking of quarterbacks, before we get to our conversations. And that is, even though it's a tad stale right now, the trade that was made after last week's podcast was recorded, but the trade that was made by the 49ers trading Trey Lance for a fourth-round draft choice to the Dallas Cowboys. And as I wrote on Monday in my column in Football Morning in America, I just think it's a bad trade for both teams. The 49ers seem to be kind of happy about getting a fourth-round pick. And look, the Dallas Cowboys the last 2 years have had the 129th overall pick, a low fourth-round pick, because the Cowboys have been good. The Cowboys are going to be good again. Their pick in the fourth round is going to be somewhere underneath, 120, somewhere after 120. So, I mean, like, big deal. You get the 129th pick in the draft for a guy who 2.25 years ago you paid three ones for. And, you know, I just want to make one other point. A lot of people have... I've gotten a lot of reaction to what I wrote in my column. And a lot of people said, well, geez, you know, there were salary cap ramifications that you didn't even get into, which is true. And I probably should have at least mentioned that it rids them of $5 million on the cap next year. But, you know, the San Francisco 49ers are $7 or $8 million over the cap projected to next year. And they still have to sign Nick Bosa. But the Buffalo Bills are $25 million over the cap next year. The Miami Dolphins, $31 million over the cap next year. That's just a fact of life in today's NFL. You got to fix your cap situation. Teams do it all the time. So I don't think the cap thing should be that big a deal. In my opinion, the 49ers have used three quarterbacks to start games in four of Kyle Shanahan's 6 years. It amazes me that a guy just brought into the system, Brandon Allen, you think is going to be better for your team this year than a guy you thought 2.25 years ago was going to be your franchise quarterback for the next 15 years. It's an incredible story of how Trey Lance fell, but I think the 49ers just pulled the trigger too early on him. We haven't spoken about it, but what's your thought?
Yeah, I mean, basically what you said is why I thought that the 49ers would keep him for this year, because they have used so many quarterbacks throughout Kyle Shanahan's tenure. You know, just the simple fact that you have one who, well, he may not necessarily be executing the system as well as you would like, he's still experienced in it. He is still familiar with it, right? So that makes him a better option as a third quarterback than many, many, many other third quarterbacks throughout the entire National Football League. And the other thing, too, when it comes to those salary cap implications, the 49ers have one of the cheapest quarterback rooms in all of football. And we don't think of that quarterback room as being a bad room, right? Their starter, Brock Purdy, literally the last pick in the draft. So think about what that means when it comes to slotted salary, right? And he's not even eligible for a contract extension until after next year. So when you have that guy, you have Sam Darnold, who's not on a very expensive quarterback contract, and then Trey Lance, kind of add that all together. And it's like, okay, well, that's part of why the 49ers can do different things, like sign Javon Hargrave, right? you know, when you bring in that guy as a defensive tackle, arguably the top free agent in the NFL, well, they can do that because they have such a cheap quarterback room. And, you know, when you're talking about shedding $5 million of salary for next year, that's really not even that much when it comes to the grand scheme of things. So, yeah, you can say that the cap implications did this and did that. But I felt like when you have somebody in Brock Purdy who, yeah, you trust, but he's not, you know, as proven.
He's not bulletproof. He's not an absolute. Yes.
Right. He's not. I mean, I think he was impressive from all the things we saw last year. Absolutely. But you never know what happens with a quarterback going into his second year. Sam Darnold also, like, we know who Sam Darnold is. I've been watching him since he was at USC. He turns the football over. That's just what he does. He's not always an accurate passer. I mean, he could be fine in Kyle Shanahan's system, but I'm not thinking he's going to revolutionize anything. But after that, you know, if an emergency happens, right, would you rather have Trey Lance? Would you rather have Brandon Allen? I mean, I don't know. I guess they would rather have Brandon Allen, or at least they'd rather have Brandon Allen in a fourth round pick than Trey Lance and not a fourth round pick. And that calculus is just very interesting to me.
Yeah, I agree. I just, some of it, and look, there is the thought that, look, Trey Lance is now a sunk cost. Get rid of him. Get the headache out of there. I get it. But the thought that you believe that a guy in your system for now almost 2.5 years is, if you need to play a third quarterback this year, is not going to be better than Brandon Allen, who just got there this offseason. I mean, either Trey Lance is the worst quarterback anybody's ever seen, which in the last preseason game, not the third one, but in the second preseason game, he played well. And look, you know, it's a little bit now of the dog chasing his tail that nobody's going to convince anybody. Nobody can convince me that this is a smart move. But we'll see what happens. We'll see who wins. And look, as crazy as this sounds, and it does sound crazy, but it's not unprecedented. 66% of the time in Kyle Shanahan's career, he's had to play a third quarterback. So, I mean, if Brandon Allen has to come in and play, this is going to be the weirdest situation ever. He'll have the most pressure on him of any third-string quarterback ever. You know? Because everybody will be saying, well, Trey Lance could have done better than that. Anyway, enough of that. Listen, later in the podcast, Miles and I are going to come back and give you our thoughts about the Deshaun Watson situation in Cleveland. How will he play? He is a total, absolute mystery heading into the regular season. We're going to talk about that. But first, we're going to get into our conversations this week on the podcast. Our first one is going to be with Seattle quarterback Geno Smith. Sat with him on a beautiful day last week in Seattle, and he told me a few things about what he's going to do this year that are different from 2022. So here's my conversation with Geno Smith. In Renton, Washington with the Seahawks, and I'm here with Seattle quarterback Geno Smith. And Geno, I've got to start off by asking you, you're a confident person. We spoke almost exactly a year ago. You thought you were going to play well last year, but you were probably in the minority of people who thought that you were going to prove yourself. And you went out, you threw 30 touchdown passes, you threw for almost 4,300 yards, far and away your best year as an NFL player. Were you remotely surprised at what you did last year?
I wasn't. You know, I really wasn't surprised. Honestly felt like I could have played better. You know, I felt like I left a little bit out there. And I think that was like my motivation coming into the offseason is, you know, try and get better. You know, I know I can be better. It was my first year starting in a long time. And, you know, it was fun. I had a lot of fun.
Tell me, if you can, pick out a time last year where you're playing the game and you said, man, I knew I could do this. Maybe nobody else did. Was there a game, especially early on, where you felt like, I mean, obviously a very emotional opening game, right, you know, when Russell Wilson comes back and you guys win. But when did it occur to you that, you know, hey, I can do exactly what I said I was going to do?
I mean, to be honest with you, I would say back in like 2016 when I was on the Giants. And then I would say the year prior when I, you know, got to start those three games here in Seattle, we went 1-2, you know, but I had thrown like 5 touchdowns, 1 interception on a tip pass. And I just felt like the game had, you know, really slowed down for me. I felt like I had ownership of the offense. I knew exactly what, you know, Shane wanted to do and how Pete wanted to do things.
Shane Waldron, offensive coordinator, yeah.
And, you know, I just kind of felt like I was being able to control the game more. You know, something that I, you know, like I said, back when I was on the Giants, I started to feel that. And then when I got back in some action, you know, I think that was 2020 when I played that 3-game stretch, you know, I felt like I could control the game. And so coming into the next season, you know, I just felt like from game one, you know, if I play the way that I intend to play, if I just be myself, then I'll be able to do some good things.
Were you ever thinking during the course of last year, man, I'm really glad I finally got this chance because this is really me?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, when Coach Carroll, after the Dallas game, you know, I played, funny part about last year, I played 21 games. I played every single preseason game, every single snap in the regular season, and then the playoffs. And I think after the Dallas game, Coach Carroll named me the starter. And that was it for me. You know, I was just appreciative of the opportunity, of him seeing something in me, of the organization seeing something in me to give me that opportunity. And for me, it was just about going and proving them right. You know, I know that they have a lot of faith in me and a lot of confidence in me, but I want to go out there and play the right way and make sure that everyone around here is proud of the way I play.
So let's talk a little bit about your off season and what you have done specifically this year to try to be a better player. You said you felt you left some things on the field.
Yeah.
How do you think Geno Smith's going to be better in 2023?
You know, I think it starts with, you know, in the off season, I really, you know, changed my diet. You know, I wanted to be, you know, stronger, faster, just a better athlete. And so it started with the off-season training. Didn't take a break from the season.
What was your diet? Okay, so now what's your diet like? What do you do?
So I've become a full pescatarian. I haven't had chicken or beef in about 4 or 5 months now.
You miss it?
I don't. I thought I would, but I actually don't miss it. You know, I've been eating really healthy, really clean.
You're in the right city to be a pescatarian,
yeah,
aren't you?
There's a lot of great food out here, a lot of great fish. And
what's your favorite fish?
I love cod. I love salmon. All of it, really. I try it all, but I love a few of them. And, you know, for me, like, getting my body back right, you know, as I've grown, my body's gotten better. I, you know, got a six-pack again. I'm, you know, feeling stronger in the weight room. I'm waking up with a lot more energy, a lot more, you know, juice and just attacking every single day. And so I think self-improvement is really where I'm at in my life. Constant self-improvement. Every single day is an opportunity to get better. I'm in the right place for that because Coach Carroll preaches that. That's his mantra, to compete every day. And so the competition now is with myself. How much better can I get on a daily basis? How much stronger can I be? How consistent can I be in my footwork and my reads and my accuracy? And then just leadership. You know, every single part of my game's got to improve. And that's something I'm really taking ownership of.
So what specifically in a football sense did you say to yourself, I really want to get better at X this year? And what did you work on throughout this offseason?
You know, really, I want to be a more mobile, using my legs a little bit more. You know, I was great. I've always been a great pocket passer. I still feel like I don't really, you know, do enough of the stuff on the move and enough of the scramble and some of the extra stuff that is not, you know, within the play. And so being able to create off schedule and then, you know, in the red zone, you know, being able to attack a little bit more in the red zone, score some more touchdowns. You know, 30 touchdowns was great, but I think we could, you know, a bunch of those were just, you know, deep balls and outside the red zone. So if we can, you know, add to that by having more touchdowns in the red zone, our offense becomes that more efficient and explosive. And then, you know, third downs. You know, third downs is a critical down in the NFL. And it's the money down. for both sides. And so being able to be one of the better teams in third down, that will help us, you know, allow us to stay on the field longer and keep our defense off the field. And, you know, when you talk about complementary football, that's what we want to do. You know, we want to make sure that we're playing complementary football and doing all the things that are necessary to winning. And those are some things that I feel like I could have gotten better at.
The other day, I watched your preseason game against Dallas and saw Jackson Smith and Jigba, you know, really show up on the field. Tell me what you have seen in him and tell me what you think he will add to this offense.
You know, from day one, he's just a natural, you know, catcher of the football. He can track it. He's all hands. He catches everything with his hands. He's a great route runner. For his size and stature, he's very tough. He plays a lot bigger than his size says. You know, I know a lot of people like to harp on his speed, but he's running past a lot of really fast guys. And so he's got that football speed, that knack to making big plays that you look for. He understands the game really well. And, you know, with the guys that we already have, he's a great complement to our offense. You know, you got a true X receiver in DK Metcalf who, you know, you better double him or he can go off. You got a true Z or a guy that we can move around in Tyler Lockett, who's been a consistent, you know, 1,000-yard, 10-touchdown guy in this league for 9 years now. And so you add Jackson and then the tight ends that we have and then the running back room that we have, along with this young offensive line that's just growing and, in my opinion, can be one of the best in the league, it makes a QB's job a lot more easy. And so Jackson is a great complement to this team, and he's also a humble young man, and so we enjoy having him.
I want to ask you a little bit about your mental process, and basically I'm sure that you have had some young kids and I'm sure you've counseled some young kids, but I wonder, a story like yours where you came into the league and you played early and then you go almost a decade without being a regular starter in the NFL, and I wonder, what advice do you give to young players or even just young people who hear about your story?
You know, I think the important thing to do is to take ownership, not make any excuses, not look for a cop-out, don't look for any excuses. Instead, find ways to get better. Find reasons to get better. Find your why. You know, why do you do this? That'll keep you in it when maybe no one else believes. And then, like I said, man, just owning every single little mistake. You know, if it's something that you did that caused it to happen, you got to own up to it and then get better from it. That's the only way to learn. And, yeah, I've been able to talk to a lot of young guys and a lot of guys on this team who are probably in a similar position that I was in, where, you know, they feel like they are capable starters but haven't gotten the opportunity. And, you know, if you let that consume your mind, then you'll miss out on the opportunity to work for it. So just train as if you already are. Believe in yourself. The ultimate confidence comes from within. It should never come from, you know, anyone on the outside. And, you know, be a self-starter. Getting up at, you know, 6 a.m., going to the gym, writing notes, studying, reading, you know, all those things, you have to do it. No one can tell you to do it. And so I just took ownership of everything, and I made sure that when my opportunity came, I'd be ready for it.
If I asked you one or two things you learned when you were not playing that have made you a better player, what did you learn by watching and by being around other quarterbacks?
I would say, you know, one of the things I learned is the importance of note-taking. I'm very, very particular in the way that I write notes and take notes.
How do you write notes? Are you very specific?
Very, very specific. And I have piles and piles of notebooks over the course of the years. And if you know, one day we may have to go through them, and you guys will see that day by day, I've, you know, consistently taking notes, even if it's something that I know already. I'll write it down as if I don't, you know, and I listen to what coach says. I'm big on being coachable. You know, I want to be coached. I want to be pushed. And so the amount of notes that I take, it just allows me to, you know, remember things way better than if I didn't take notes. And another thing that I learned just from the quarterbacks I've been around is the importance of leadership and positive leadership. Everyone's got a different style. Everyone comes from a different place. Everyone reacts to things differently. But everyone needs that person that's positive and uplifting and going to, you know, make them believe that things are going to be great, even if it's not looking good.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's something I really learned from Russell, man. He's got that unwavering belief. And, you know, I commend him for that, because that's, you know, that's something that I didn't always have. And I've learned that no matter what it looks like, you can always find a way. And so those are two things I've learned.
We'll end with this. You had to have had a moment with Pete Carroll after last season, during this offseason. You had to have a moment where not just maybe gratitude for giving you this shot, but maybe gratitude from him as well for having shown faith in you, and you really gave that faith back, and you performed exactly how this team thought you could at your peak. Have you had a moment with Pete to talk about that?
I think every day for us is that moment. You know, knowing how Coach Carroll is, he always says it, man, anybody can do it one time. You know, it's what are you going to do next? You know, we're not focused on what we did in the past. Instead, we're looking forward to just, you know, living in the moment. And today is another opportunity for us to get better. It's a Tell the Truth Monday. We're out here, you know, on the lawn, and we're just focusing on a day-by-day
step. What is it, Tell the Truth Monday?
Tell the Truth Monday is what we do after games, and we go in there into the meeting room, and we assess what the game was like, whether it's good or bad. We tell the truth about it, and we don't hide from it. We don't run from it. Instead, we look at ways to get better. And so the gratitude for us is the fact that we get to come in and do this thing every single day together. I'm very appreciative of Coach Carroll and this organization and this city. And I'm grateful just for being here. And so I want to show that gratitude with my hard work every day and, you know, just with my humbleness. And so I hopefully, you know, that's something I'm doing.
I think you and the 49ers could have a pretty good battle with this division this year. What do you think?
I think so. They're a great team. They're a great team. They had a great year last year. They're returning a lot of great players, and you know, we're you know, right there fighting for it. So I look forward to those matchups.
Gino, good luck. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
And we'll be back after this with my conversation with Sean Payton.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus. Afoxolaner, moxidectin, and pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus chews.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay,
when the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone,
or you say,
hang it in there,
because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak,
then this is your sign to call, text, or chat 988 for free, confidential support, anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
Happy to be joined by Sean Payton today, fresh off the practice field out in Denver. And Sean, I wonder how you feel when you look at yourself in the mirror and you're in orange instead of black and gold. Is it still weird to you, or are you used to it now?
I think you get used to it. Obviously, you know, I'm kind of one of those guys that doesn't like clutter. And so that involved a lot of purging of black and gold. Of just, you know, 16 years of gear. And my wife's worse. She keeps everything, you know, and I have to intervene when she's out of town and just take stuff, you know. But no, I think, you know, periodically something comes up and you'll be like, wow, I just said that and I really meant to say Broncos or something, you know, and but it's going well. You know, people ask, hey, how are you getting adjusted to the city? And so I haven't really seen much of it. You know, we got a house in Cherry Creek, 20 minutes from the facility. You know, I kind of know the to and from there. Tomorrow's our first time at the stadium. And it's not just my first time, because our first two preseason games were on the road, but there's quite a few players. And I gave them the Breeze story. You know, in 06, we weren't at home for any preseason games. And so then we were on the road week one and week two, and it's Atlanta Monday night. And my big concern was no one's really taken a ride to the Superdome. And, you know, 2 hours before the game, everyone has to be there, and there's going to be a lot of traffic, you know, with Bon Jovi Bono and Green, all of that. And there's Breeze stuck in traffic 15 minutes away from the Superdome. We have to send a trooper out to get him. And then it gets worse. He was driving back then those old, it was a Range. It was a Land Rover, like you used to see at Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, with a rack on the top. And it was an old kind of typical Drew Brees vehicle. And we get to the stadium and you got to pull into the parking garage. It's concrete, you know, a height restriction. And he's running late. He pulls in and wedges his Land Rover in the concrete. God. And so it's stuck. The wheels are and he literally stops. He leaves the keys in the seat and tells him, I got to go in. And it's wedged in this entrance, and I'm in the hallway, and I'm thinking, you know, Drew's usually 4 hours before a game, very routine driven. And here it is 2 hours and 3 minutes before. And I'm like, hey, we got a game here, you know? And so, well, we didn't have a preseason game to navigate the logistics. So fortunately for not only our players, for coaches, this is our first time, you know, driving to the stadium. So
I hope you told your guys the story of Steve Gleason and what happened in that game. One of the great games you ever coached.
Absolutely. And it was more than just football that night, but it'll be nice to play a home game. And all of us to see the locker room, the logistics of where we park, all those things, you know, that you hope to accomplish in preseason.
So Sean, I we have not talked in probably 6 weeks, but you know, you had sort of a weird beginning there with the Nathaniel Hackett stuff and the Jared Bell interview. And I wonder, as you look back on that, do you say, man, I was out of practice being a head coach, and I said something I shouldn't have said, and I don't know why I did it. Why did you do that? Was it just a mistake?
Yeah, it was. And look, it wasn't Jared or anyone else. I regret it. And I said that much so the next day. I think there's this buildup, you know, all the time of, you know, my mom used to say you can only take a pound of flesh from somebody, and whether it was Russell or the team or the coaching staff. And my point was really there were a lot of people that didn't have their best year. And it wasn't, now obviously the attention always gets thrown at the quarterback and the head coach, but that was really the gist of it. And certainly, you know, I needed a little bit more filter.
Tell me, now that you have been with Russell Wilson for 4 or 5 months, tell me what he's been like to work with. What's your initial impressions of him?
Yeah, I've been impressed. I would say in a lot of ways, I think the first thing, it's easier for others to notice it more than me, but his weight's down to, man, he's 212, 213. I would say he's moving really well. One of the things he's always done exceptionally well is deliver the ball off schedule. A play breaks down, you know, he can go get 18 yards, or he can flush the pocket and find. And so with a quarterback like that, the receivers and tight ends and running backs get in tune to, oh, here it goes. We're on the second part of a play. What are our scramble rules? Because it happens more with him than maybe other guys that you've worked with or other guys in the league, but he's exceptional in that area. We played San Francisco the other night, and he's got, you know, three or four plays that get us a first down when the pocket opens up maybe, and the rush lanes aren't perfect. So, and then I would say the time he's here in the morning till the evening, very much like Drew relative to, you know, the great players that that position in our league work at an extremely different level. You know that, you've seen them. And so his work ethic is fantastic. And then there's kind of an excitement with him, and it's kind of contagious. I think that he's had a good off season. Man, the last 2 weeks of training camp, he's really played well in the practices, and you know, the people that are here watching every day see it. We had two good days with the Rams yesterday and the day before, with Sean McVay and his team. They were in. That was invaluable and event-free, quiet, you know, just like you want as a coach, you know, without all the chippy fighting and everything. And so, but I've been really impressed with how he's playing, how he's throwing the ball, his arm strength, all of those things. I'm excited for him. I think he's really excited, and I think he feels like he's moving better, and he's throwing, you know, all those things. And I think, you know, there's that, the unique thing, and you and I have talked about this before, as players change, it falls on us as coaches to do the things that they do best. And so with Kerry Collins in New York, it was one thing, or Quincy Carter in Dallas, or Bledsoe, or Breeze, or Taysom Hill, or Teddy Bridgewater. And the same thing applies with Russell, you know, doing all the studies of Seattle, the things that he's done exceptionally well, having a vision for stuff that we think he's going to excel at. It's our job to put those players in those positions. We did a study. I started down a road here, and it kind of became a little bit of a rabbit hole of cutting up touchdowns in New Orleans from 21. It was going to be 5 years, and then it went to 10. And then pretty soon it was 16 years of 807 touchdowns. And of those 807, we might've clipped 400, and they're perfect plays. This is a cut up where every play ends in a touchdown. All right. And so going through some of those cut ups, and not only for Russell, but for some of the other players, like, hey, this is how you play away from the ball. You know, for the screens to go for 40 yards and a touchdown, it's more than just the offensive lineman and the running back, Marcus Colt, you know. And it's for me, it was kind of nice because, man, when you do that, that thing became longer and longer, and all of a sudden you're coming across ideas that you forgot about, right. And you're like, this is still good. I don't know what happened or where I was. Why did we stop doing this? And all of it with the eye of how does it fit Russell? And so that 807, by the way, in 16 years is the most in the history of the NFL of any 16-year stretch ever. And wow. So
807 touchdown passes.
No, just 807 touchdowns. So the ultimate cut up, Peter, was run clips, screens, naked boots, play action pass, goal line, red zone. There's about eight of these reels that have all these thoughts that we can grasp and show. And so I didn't take all 807. 400 were perfect pictures. But the other thing in that exercise that was interesting, and I don't care if it was in 06 where it was Colston and Bush, or and then it was Graham or Sproles, there were these star quality players, but there were a ton of best supporting actors, and that's our league. And so as we're working through our receiver depth, you know, let's paint the perfect picture for the Q. Cortland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, you know, we've got a handful of weapons. And they're going to appear on that reel, but as you know, that there's going to be Keith Kirkwood, Austin Carr, there's going to be Dan Arnold, Tommy Lee Lewis, Terrence Copper, the different backs, the team, you don't get four Robert De Niro's in your offense. You got to have some best supporting actors. And so I think it's good to see that as a coach, but it's also great for us to be able to resource that. And that's a long stretch, you know? And so 807, 16 years, the next was, I think, New England, obviously, and they're and we love cutting them up. And then it went to Bill Walsh's 49ers with Montana and Young in the 700s. And so, because you asked the question, do we want to be special? This is what it takes for a run. You know, anyone that has a long run in our league on a Sunday, a 38-yard touchdown run, there's a lot happening down the field. You know, you've got to handle the safeties and the corners. So it's kind of been fun starting over. You're literally starting again, building a new program, and these guys have been fantastic. The players, the organization, everyone, the supporting cast is fantastic, and I'm excited about it.
John, one more thing about Russell Wilson, and I'll let you go. So 2 years ago, in the 2020 season, I should say now 3 years ago, but in the 2020 season in Seattle, he's a 69% passer who throws 40 touchdown passes. Last year, he's a 61% passer and throws 16 touchdown passes. Doesn't run as much. Seemed to me, anyway, to have really lost some confidence as the year sort of went down the tubes. What do you see from Russell Wilson in his absolute prime to last year, and can you fix it?
Yeah, and I think, look, I can't tell you it wasn't broken, but there were so many things that went into that. And I think the first thing we felt we needed to do was really overhaul and look at the offensive line. And we went out and spent money on Powers and McGlinchey, and we got a young right guard we like, a center from LSU, the left tackle who's playing well. You know, that position group permeates your building. And so the two greatest allies for good quarterback play are a running game and good defense. If you have trouble running the ball and stopping people, that player is going to be up on the high dive quite a bit. And so I think I don't see any physical limitation that's different from 20 or even 21. I see that player. And so not rehashing last season, because clearly it was different. All of us saw it, and it was like, it was almost like the weekly update, you know. And I get it, you know, because look, you and I both know what sells. You know, it's the fantastic stories or the holy cow, what's going on? You know, everything else in the middle doesn't. And right. I would say this, he's going to be a lot closer to those 2021 numbers than he was the 2022 numbers. And just because I'm seeing it now, we play in a tough division and there's going to be tough weeks and all sorts of hurdles. But I understand the question. And honestly, I like what I'm seeing a lot. And I would say even I've been pleasantly surprised, like, wow, the arm talent and the throws down the field. He's always thrown a really good deep ball. But I do think he's moving a lot better, Peter. I think his weight last year was 10 to 15 pounds heavier, and it wasn't what you were or I were accustomed to seeing. And I at Fox, right. You know, each week we would cover the games and talk about them, and then you know, there's something powerful about a guy with a chip on his shoulder, and I experienced that with my last quarterback when he injured his shoulder. He got released from the Chargers. There were two teams really that had interest. One kind of had interest, and then we were the ones saying, hey, we're all in. And I think that's a pretty significant motivating factor and I take that very seriously for him, meaning, hey, let's go do the things that you do well regularly and let's win. You know, ultimately, it's about winning. And so, you know, if Teddy Bridgewater finished 22 of 31 and we won by 21 to 18 or whatever, in 2 weeks, it was just a win. And right. that's how we're all ultimately measured. And I know he's a winner.
Sean Payton, listen, good luck. You're going to be a fun team to watch. You got a fun quarterback to watch. And it'll be a fun coach to watch. So enjoy the season.
Come out and visit us. We'll put you in the quarterback meetings, and we'll come up with some new plays that have never been run before.
Well, I've seen that before.
And I don't know that we have anyone that can play the piano like Austin Carr.
No,
but outside of that.
I remember you said after that time in, I guess it was 2018, you said, here's a guy who's going to be president of the United States one day, Austin Carr.
Yeah.
What a guy he was. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, he had his training camp in New England, and he was released, and we picked him up on waivers, you know, and just to see, and he found a niche, you know, and we kind of knew the things he did well. And every time he'd catch a touchdown in a game, I'd get a text from Brady, like, what on earth are you guys doing?
Oh, that's pretty good. Hey, listen, enjoy it. Thanks a lot, Sean.
Thanks, Peter.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you got to check out NexGard Plus, afoxolaner, moxidectin, and pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease. Plus, it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus Chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding right your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.
My thanks to Geno Smith and Sean Payton for their time. And I think it's going to be really, really interesting to see Sean Payton's impact on Russell Wilson. I think it's already fairly encouraging that Russell Wilson has a much lower profile. And as people around that building and people who cover the team have sort of indicated in the last month or so, there's just a lot less clutter and a lot less noise around Russell Wilson than there was a year ago. So be very interesting to see how that pans out. The most interesting quarterback situation right now, Miles, in the NFL, I believe, and look, we can talk about Aaron Rodgers. Obviously, that's a fascinating thing. We talk about Russell Wilson. That's a fascinating thing. Lamar Jackson coming back. There's a lot of Jimmy Garoppolo. You know, can Brock Purdy stay upright? But to me, the most interesting quarterback situation in football right now is Deshaun Watson in the Cleveland Browns. And look, I thought it was very interesting that after the cutdown, the Cleveland Browns essentially now seem to be in the market for maybe a fourth quarterback. And, you know, you wonder, why would they, once they decided to keep Kellen Mond, if indeed, you know, they are going to keep Kellen Mond. He's on the roster now.
They're in the market for another quarterback. He's going to come through waivers. Because they did waive Kellen. Yeah. So
okay, they waived him, but they plan to bring him back.
Yeah, on the practice squad.
And I would be really surprised if he doesn't come back, at least on the practice squad, if not as the third quarterback. But probably you're right, probably on the practice squad. But the fact that they're looking for a fourth quarterback, you know, it raises eyebrows with me about whatever form of contentedness they have right there with Deshaun Watson. And look, I was there in the summer early on in camp, and he's getting defended, and there's a lot of pro-Deshaun stuff. The crowds were very Watson-friendly, even though there's still a lot of people in the city who are angry at the Browns for picking him up. And then obviously paying him a ridiculous amount of money. But Miles, you have roots in Cleveland. You have friends in Cleveland. What do you sense is the feeling there about whether Deshaun Watson is going to revert to form or whether he's going to struggle?
Well, it is all about Deshaun Watson. And the unfortunate thing, maybe is unfortunate or maybe it's not, I don't know. But the thing about that is, we can say this about many teams, right? But as the quarterback goes, then that's the way the team is going to go. So they did do a lot of other things to try and improve the team, right? I think bringing in Jim Schwartz was a good move as defensive coordinator, only going to make that defensive front more aggressive. That should only help a guy like Myles Garrett. You know, obviously you still have Denzel Ward, who is one of the really good corners in this league, you know, and the Browns need him to hopefully come back from that concussion sooner than later. But at the end of the day, it's all going to be about whether or not Deshaun Watson can revert to even 85%, right, of what he was before he was suspended for 11 games and missed the season before as he was still with the Texans. I mean, it's been a long time since we saw Deshaun Watson play at an elite level. That was in 2020, you know? I mean, it was 2019 in that season when they went to Kansas City, got up 24-0, and then ended up getting blasted 31-30-something, whatever that was, in the AFC divisional round playoffs. So that's kind of the last time that we saw good Deshaun Watson. I don't know if we're going to see that at that level, but if you have a guy like Nick Chubb, who can run the ball as effectively as he can, you know, you have somebody like Amari Cooper, who is a very talented receiver who can do a lot of different things. They seem to be extremely excited about Elijah Moore and everything that he can do in that offense and, you know, be a do everything kind of guy. That's reason to be excited, especially David Njoku. You know, from everything I read from Cleveland, you know, he can't be covered, you know, and that's something that they took advantage of, you know, in that last preseason game as he was getting open. So I don't know where it's going to go, but I do know this. If Deshaun Watson's not performing up to a standard, they're not going to get rid of Deshaun Watson. They're going to get rid of the coach, because that's the way these things work, right? You've paid Deshaun Watson already. That salary is guaranteed. Deshaun Watson's going to be there. And then they're going to try to find somebody who can fix him, right? Or fix the offense around him. And that may cost the coach, Kevin Stefanski, his job if it doesn't work. So the Browns need this to work in order to keep this stability. And whether or not Deshaun Watson is elite again or above average, very good, and especially in a competitive division like the AFC North, man, it's at least going to be a very fascinating story to play out over, you know, the next 18 weeks.
So this is what we know about Deshaun Watson. He sat out 100 weeks before playing the last 6 weeks of the season last year. And those 100 weeks were spent in probably the most mentally high stress times that a quarterback would ever have to deal with, or a human being would ever have to deal with. I am not throwing any empathy his way. I'm just saying that, you know, he came back, and you have to think that football, maybe it was the first thing on his mind, but he had to have other things on his mind. He played six games. He played more poorly than good. Mm-hmm. The Cleveland Browns averaged 16.3 points per game in the six games he played. And so everybody around Cleveland just said, hey, what do you expect? He's been through a lot, and he hasn't played football in so long. So now I'm not sure that it's great that he then has, after that, 9 months to practice, throw the football around, do all that. I mean, this guy needs to play football. And obviously, there's no games in March, April, and May. So we simply don't know now. He sat 100 weeks, then he played six mediocre games. Now he sat and practiced for 9 months, and now he comes in again. I don't have a lot of indication right now that he's going to be great. He might, and he has been great before, and he's still very young. But I need to see it, Miles. Yeah, and I just don't know if we are going to see it.
I don't know either. And you know, I mean, it's a situation of Deshaun Watson's own making, right? He is responsible for his actions, you know, and he's responsible for not playing for as long as he did because, of course, I mean, first, you know, it's so fascinating to me too how we got into it, right, Peter? Because it was like, okay, well, Deshaun Watson doesn't want to play for the Texans anymore. He doesn't want to play for the Texans anymore. And then you get to hear like accusation after accusation after accusation of sexual misconduct and assault. And you're like, holy crap, what in the world? And then he sits out for a year. And then, you know, there are no criminal charges filed. So four teams line themselves up and supplicate themselves at his feet to say, hey, please come play for me. And then he tells the Browns they're out. And the Browns are like, hey, we'll guarantee your entire salary. And then boom, okay. Well, man, if that's the case, of course I want to play for you. But it was never really about the salary. But yeah, I'm sure that's really the case. I mean, and then, you know, we get the suspension for that in 11 games. And they came up with that as a settlement. But it's just, it's fascinating to me how we got to this point, you know. And I don't, like you said, I don't know if it's going to work or not, but I do know that what happens when players don't play up to expectations is usually it falls on the coach, you know? And that's one of the interesting things where the Browns are very different than what we expect from the Broncos, say, if Russell Wilson doesn't play up to snuff, right? I mean, you already got rid of one coach. Nathaniel Hackett did not do a good job of coaching the Denver Broncos last year. I mean, and that is, it's not just one guy, you know, it's not, I frankly don't think it was just Nathaniel Hackett. Certainly Russell Wilson is responsible for many elements of his own performance, but now you bring in a Sean Payton and you say, okay, we know you can coach. So what can you do with him? Right. It's different with the Browns because it's not, I mean, we've, thinks Kevin Stefanski can coach. You know, he was coach of the year in 2020, his first year with the Browns. That's the first time the Browns have won a playoff game, I mean, since the mid-1990s, back when they were the Ravens, which is another subject that I don't necessarily want to go into because it hurts me personally. But when you have that situation, you think Stefanski can coach. You know, he did good things with Baker Mayfield, then Baker Mayfield falls off the cliff, so then you bring in Deshaun Watson. I don't know where it's going to go, but like you said, I mean, it's fascinating because of that element. And if Stefanski cannot get Deshaun Watson to play at a decently high level, then I think we could be talking about another Browns coaching search in January.
Well, we certainly have that to look forward to, Miles Simmons. Ought to be a good time in Cleveland if that happens.
I hope so.
So that's going to be it for this week's podcast. We touched on a few topics. You heard from some interesting people. And we're going to be back next week with our predictions edition of the Peter King podcast. Miles Simmons and I, he doesn't even know this yet, but he is going to give his predictions the exact same way as I am. And also next week, you will hear Very interesting conversation I had with Cam Jordan of the New Orleans Saints on the training camp trail. One of the smartest, most interesting players in the NFL. You'll really, really enjoy that. But for now, that's going to be it for this week's edition of the Peter King Podcast. So glad you're able to join me. And next week, we will actually be previewing games that matter. So that'll be a very, very, very good time. Thanks a lot for experiencing the Peter King Podcast this week. And we look forward to seeing you again next week.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you gotta check out NexGard Plus, ofoxaconazole, moxidectin, and pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease, plus it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus Chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.